Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
Hey, I'm Tyler.
And I'm KC.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
Spit everywhere.
What is happening, all you woodsy type folks out there? It is a blustery spring day here in Northeast Texas. I'm not the whitetail weatherman, though, but I still have the weather report from time to time. Tyler and I are sitting here looking at green grass and
not
flowers all blooming in springtime, and we're not catching bass. My dad and granddad are out catching crappie right now. My dad's like, he texted me, he said, "Do you want to go crappie fishing?" It's like, that's not the right question, sir. It's like, do you want to go to Alaska? It's not the right question either.
No.
But that is the question. The answer is yes. Today on the show, we have got Tyler Friel, who's an outdoor writer, and he's got another podcast called Tundra Talk, and he's an Alaska native, does a ton of the Alaska life stuff, man.
Like, he's not a Native American, though.
No, he's not a Native American. It's, I don't know really what the right, denotation of that is, you know, I guess, well, he is an Alaska native because he's from, what do you say, Idaho or something like that, right, originally? Oh, Southern Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado. Yeah.
Anyways, we'll let him tell you about that, but he might be on Life Below Zero one of these days. He's that cool, so be ready for for that interview.
Dang.
But, he does some cool stuff, man, and we had all, or I had started a thing, Moose in 2020, I think, was something I used to say.
That didn't happen.
And now it's 2021, so that didn't happen. Life happens instead, but one of these days, I'm probably going to end up up there doing a little hunting, or fishing at least.
I can tell you, I don't know, man. It seems like an expensive deal, and I don't have any disposable money right now.
Oh, no.
And I don't know, like, I just don't know if I ever will.
What if you just sold your truck one day and just, like, went?
I did that last year and I went hunting
instead. That's true. I think the fishing might be a little bit easier to make happen.
For sure.
You know, well, we asked Tyler a little bit about that in the interview, about what, you know, what's actually practical and whatnot. But around here, what's practical to do right now is fish. Dream about hunting turkeys that might one day return to the landscape, especially if Tyler keeps burning. And work on your gear and talk about gear and do all kinds of gear stuff. We've been doing a lot of that kind of stuff. We've been testing out a lot of new stuff, kind of tweaking some of our setups and stuff like that. And we actually just released a saddle comparison video. We did a lot of saddle hunting this past year, killed a lot of deer out of saddles. We used tethereds last year and they were great. We also have a cruiser and a trophy line to test out in this newest video. So if you haven't watched that, we'd really appreciate it if you go check it out. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know if you have a preference of those three or if there's something else to look at too. I know that they all were good products, and you know, pretty much anything that's going to be mainstream like that, you're not going to have just completely junk, because it's like, you can have junk boots, but you can't have,
well, your life's on the line in a saddle. So
exactly, yeah. That's the thing. Like, you have to at least survive, right?
But I'll tell you, there was a there was a difference, and that's what we're kind of looking for, is like, we're testing saddles out because we want to figure out, like, what's the best option for us going forward. If we're going to be in these things a lot and we're going to hunt, you know, 95% or more out of these saddles, like, we want something that is comfortable and very practical, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, I can speak for you on this too. Comfortable is nice, but practical is probably more important to probably both of us than just being comfortable.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I mean, if you wanted to be comfortable, we'd hunt out of box blinds with rifles.
Yeah. But, I probably wouldn't hunt if I wanted to be comfortable.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not really thing that goes hand in hand.
No.
At least not on a extended basis, you know? Mm. Like, if you wanted to hunt, like, a weekend or two a year, then you could probably stay comfortable. But more often than not, people who are listening to this show are probably a little bit more in the vein of, you know, a little more serious about it. I mean,
their own comforts.
Yeah, exactly. Like, And you know, by all means, if you're just a kind of person who likes to go hunt a weekend or two a year, but you think that our accents are funny, that's fine too. You know, keep listening. But like, to want to listen to a podcast about hunting, you have to be a little bit more on the vein of like, let me figure out how to really do this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why, I mean, really, that's why we started podcasting as well. So,
yeah.
You know, you can find people to talk to that really know something about some stuff. So, that's why we thought it'd be a good idea to talk to Tyler Friel and Tyler Jones, of course. But Tyler Friel, because the dude lives in Alaska. He Alaska's in the news as of late. It's always in the news because it's just, for a lot of people, it seems like a little bit out of reach. It seems wild.
It's seeming like that for me right now.
Also a what do they call it, like a pop word or whatever, you know, when people say Alaska or like,
hot,
it's political. Yeah, exactly. Pebble Mine, all this stuff, ANWR.
I didn't even know Pebble Mine was in Alaska.
Yeah. Well,
like all that country basically from Canada north, just, it's like, is it Northwest Territories? Is it Canada? Is it some weird lake? Like,
dude,
where my mallard was banded from 10 years ago?
I will guarantee you no one has ever walked the whole border of Alaska in NWT.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a big, big line. So no one really knows for sure that mountain is there.
Well, there ain't no reason to walk NWT because you can just fly helicopters to the top of the mountain and shoot sheep.
That's right. And you're probably getting some interesting stuff there where you fly to the top of the mountain from the NWT but then go across and hunt Alaska doll sheep.
Giving
away
ideas.
But you flew the NWT. Man.
I would be happy to be dropped off on top of a mountain shooting sheep, I think.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good at this point in time.
It's like,
you
one
know?
Of those deals where, like, when you first start hunting deer, like, you're happy to be in a box blind and shoot one under, you know, feeder with a rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after you shoot 30 or 40 of them, you might not be the same way. You might. But
I'm definitely not the guy who's like, I want the true experience. I'm going to bring my recurve out there and chase them around. You know, it's like, no.
Guys hunt with flints, though.
I know. Tyler,
not flint locks, but flint broadheads.
Dude, he shot up a grizzly bear with a flint broadhead, and it's all on film. Killed it. Dead.
Film, meaning cell phone.
That's right, man. Yeah, he does some cool stuff, and I don't know. It kind of seems like there's a couple factors coming into that. One, for about 3 months out of the year, you just have to sit and think a lot, because that's about all there is to do. But two, like, when you live in extreme places, you have a little ingenuity about you usually, or you learn to come up with new things and different ways of making stuff happen. And I mean, golly, at the same time, when you have as many different seasons for different animals that they do, like, you're going to be a guy who tinkers and ponders and thinks about stuff a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, let's get Tyler on the phone here and, just hear all about hunting Alaska.
Holla.
All right, today on the show, we have got Tyler Friel. He hosts the Tundra Talk podcast and is an outdoor writer as well, and he is living it up in Alaska right now. Tyler, how's it going, man?
Oh, not too bad. I'm just looking out my window at about 3 feet of snow and
ooh,
got a plow. So I got I've been plowing a lot of snow lately, but yeah, we're getting towards springtime, but winter's still here for now.
Golly, man, it's like we're bordering on summer. We have got green grass,
I'm
yellow
at 3 feet
flowers.
Of grass.
Do you know what an Indian paintbrush is? Because I'm looking at one of those right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's 77, so I'm sure you never get tired of hearing about, you know, people from the South telling you how warm it is here. But
that's okay. I mean, and 77's pushing it for me, man. That's my overheat. I don't know if it was the last time I was in Texas. I got a good buddy that lives in Fort Worth. And last time I was there, we went bow fishing all night. And then during the day, I was passed out on the floor of his garage with a Camelback on, you know, overheating because I don't know how hot it was, but it was too hot. Too hot for this boy.
Yeah, dude. No lie. I'm with you, honestly, but I've learned to deal with it just like you've learned to deal with the, you know, drastically negative temperatures and stuff. I'm sure my mom was actually born in Anchorage and she lived there for a little while, so I got a little bit of I guess the thick blood coming from her side, but not a lot because I still get freezing cold whenever it's below 32. So it is what it is. So is it daylight there right now? You know, everybody thinks about Alaska as being, you know, land of darkness or whatever.
Yeah, it's daylight here now, and I think, like I said, we got more daylight than you guys now. I don't know what we're up to. We're well over 12 hours now of daylight.
Oh, wow.
And gaining like 8, 9 minutes a day now.
Yeah, that's cool. So y'all probably go straight from snow to just straight up growing season with that much daylight, I imagine, right?
Yeah, pretty much. It's been the past few days hanging around just below freezing, and here sometime in the next 3 weeks or so, it's going to kick over and all the snow will melt quick and it'll be muddy for a couple weeks and stuff will start greening up. So, yeah, it's real quick.
Yeah. That's cool, man. We wanted to get you on and talk a little bit about, you know, just, I don't know, everybody from really the lower 48, I would imagine, dreams about Alaska. And I'm sure you're used to this kind of a conversation, but it's something that's cool for a lot of us where we think about like all the wild and all the adventure and just all the stuff that there is to hunt. But, you know, life up there is pretty intriguing to me. Do you look forward to, you know, this time of year where, like, you know, green up's about to happen and you know, maybe if you got fishing on your mind and you're finally getting out of the house, or do you really look forward to that, you know, late summer, early fall season where, you know, it's time to shoot stuff?
Man, I think I kind of look forward to every season. And, you know, I'd like to say I would never get tired of fall because, you know, obviously the fall hunt seasons are my favorite, but every season's got plenty of stuff to do. You know, even going into winter, if you're, you know, I haven't been trapping the past couple of years, but if you're trapping or ice fishing, I've been doing a lot of ice fishing this year with my kids, you know, riding, we call them snow machines. Everybody else calls them snowmobiles, riding, fishing, or ice fishing, trapping, that kind of stuff. And then this time of year, you know, it's funner to get outside. We still got some fishing to do, but you know, starting to look forward to spring bear hunting and running river boats and stuff like that. And then, you know, once you're in summer, you're starting to think about fall and look forward to that, and it's just a big vicious nasty cycle.
Is there any reason to leave Alaska?
I don't think so.
It sounds like it's such a different culture, man. I mean, obviously just the activities that Mother Nature gives us here in Texas are much different, you know, like you kind of alluded to earlier. But like, so like there's so many things that you're talking about right now that I have never done that are, I kind of know what they are, you know what I mean? But like only through, you know, reading and seeing some videos and stuff like that. And like, it's so exciting and something that I would love to do. But it seems like such a far, far place. It's a land far away. You know what I mean? It's like such a hard thing to get to do, especially if you have family or whatever, and trying to, you know, buy $500-$600 plane tickets for four people. And it just seems, but man, like it just seems like such a cool place, man. You've always got something to do there, except for, I guess the period where you're kind of like cabin fever would be like the dead of winter, obviously, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That, like, January, February timeframe before it really starts, you know, and we still have, you know, 4 or 5 hours of light here during the day. But by that time it starts wearing on you, you know, and just the lack of light. And if it's been super cold, you haven't been out much. I mean, the key to thriving, and it's just staying busy and having stuff to look forward to and keep yourself busy. But,
Yeah,
no, it's almost like living on a different planet, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy also to think about this, but like our cabin fever period is like August, you know? It's like y'all are probably, you know, salmon fishing, getting ready to kill moose and stuff like that, and we're over here like just dog days, man. Like if you're not inside most of the day, you know, you stand a chance of heat exhaustion and all this stuff, you know? So it's just like kind of get inside and you just get bored, you know. So
where up here you run, you know, when it's 40 below, you're running from heat to heat. There you're running from AC to AC.
Oh, I guarantee you, man. You know,
sweat on the way to the truck.
little push button ignition thing on the truck or whatever on your keys, you know.
But man, it's for air conditioning there.
Huh? Oh yeah, it's a game changer, man. How'd you end up in Alaska? Geez.
Well, I moved up here with my family when I was 16. My dad. Was born here and grew up mostly here. And then I was born in Southern Colorado and grew up there mostly. And my dad always wanted to move back, and we had the opportunity. And when I was a teenager and never really looked back, man, it was it became home pretty quick.
Yeah, I would imagine. It just seems like so much opportunity if you have that outdoor vein in you, you know, that's what you – and you want to do that kind of stuff. It's just hard to beat. Do you like what do you do for a living up there?
Well, the past couple of years, I have a variety of pedals.
I figured it would be that way, you know. Like, well, with things being so drastically different, summer and winter, like you can't do the same thing 12 months of the year, you know.
Yeah, it kind of depends. I mean, I out of high school, I went to college and got an engineering degree that I don't use, but I right out of high school, my dad was at insulation contractor, mechanical systems and, you know, heat piping and ventilation, stuff like that, mm-hmm. like industrial stuff. And we've got a lot of, you know, a couple big military bases here and some industrial construction. So, came up in that trade out of high school when I was in college and just kept doing it. And then I started writing for Outdoor Life magazine right when I got out of college about 10 years ago. And just did it on the side. And just the last few years, I've kind of been able to call that my full-time gig, which, you know, it's, you know, my wife, bless her heart, you know, she works hard too. And then just with her working and me doing this, it gives us some flexibility. I'm on dad duty when she works, and then I can do my stuff in the off time. And started podcasting a little bit, and, you know, every little bit helps. And I've done everything though, you know, for skinning wolves in the winter during trapping season for guys and stuff like that. You just sometimes you get creative to do the things you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool, man. That's kind of how we live too. You know, Tyler and I both are on dad duty quite a bit, and, you know, have wives that are in the education system and stuff. So you just kind of fill in and do whatever it takes to kind of, I don't know, pursue your passion of being a bum, really, is what we do.
Yeah, no, I was thinking the same thing.
Oh, we're in the open with it. We're not closet about that at all. Yeah. You know? So in that, you know, if you do any of that military contract and stuff or whatever, this is kind of a side note, but I have a great aunt that works, I don't know, they call it the Rock. It's out there in the Aleutians, and it's like almost to Russia, and there's a base out there or something like that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, there was, you know, there was ADAC, but I know we were just actually talking about, because I've started recently working part-time for my dad, like bidding some of this work,
mm-hmm.
and do, you know, trying to get some of these jobs. And we were just the other day talking about, it starts with an S, I think. I can't remember that.
Yeah,
that
sounds right.
But yeah, it's like farther from Fairbanks than Seattle is.
That's crazy. Yeah, so, she's like out there. It's the island's like 1 mile by 2 mile or something like that.
Yep.
And she's, there's like, it's her and like three other people. and a bunch of fox, and that's what's on the island. And that's, you know, she's got her a place there, I think, near Fairbanks or somewhere that, you know, it's kind of like her homestead, but she's only there like 3 months of the year, pretty much. The rest of the time she's out there doing supplies and stuff.
That's pretty rugged.
Yeah. She's a tough gal. I'll put it that way for sure. So it's what it takes up there, man. But you know, you got the spring season coming up. You're talking about shooting bears. Is that like, I know is one of your big things, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bear thing. It's kind of like the turkey hunt, is a lot of places down in the States. I mean, that's the spring thing to do, man. I can't get enough of it.
So, we'll just dive in as opposed to leading up. Why on earth do you want to shoot a grizzly with a stick bow with a flint point?
I don't know. It just seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah, it worked, right?
I'm the type of guy where I'll get something in my head and then I can't leave it alone till I take care of it, sort of thing. So, I had helped a buddy of mine from down in the States, on a moose hunt. I had hauled him in and dropped him off and then was hauling him out. You know, they did a full float trip and I was able to get in there with my four wheeler and haul him out. But, one of them was a world renowned, like, you know, basically PhD level type of flint napper, and it hunted with stone points a bunch, killed a bunch of elk with them. And we were talking, and I don't know how it came up, but I had said something, I'd like to kill a black bear with one of those someday. And then that led to, why not a grizzly? And I said, I don't know, why not? And I'd already killed several of them with my recurve before, so you know, kind of looking for a little way to spice it up, something cool, and I you know, was curious to see what they would do, and so that's what kicked the ball off. It wasn't anything super significant, but you know, once the idea stuck, I you know, was pretty committed to following through.
Yeah, you know, grizz are kind of like one of the, I don't know what you'd call them, you know, like American Big Five or whatever. It's like just the epitome of getting it done as an outdoorsman, right? Like, it's just the trophy animal people think about all the time. But I've always kind of wondered, you know, because it's legally you don't have to eat grizzly meat, right? So, like,
nope.
What's the and I'm by no means on the side of you shouldn't shoot them. I'm so far the other way, right? But I kind of want to understand the mindset of, like, shooting a grizz knowing you're not going to eat the animal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's a fair question. And it, and I don't know, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. The area I like to hunt them, they're real hard on moose calves and, well, not caribou calves there, but other places, those bears, especially if you can be selective and shoot like shoot mature boars. It ends up being beneficial to the bear population because they're not killing as many cubs and, you know, there's more, you know, for me, maybe that's selfish myself, 'cause I want better moose hunting there too. but you know, it's just a management tool, and they're plenty plentiful. And I don't really think, I think that sometimes the way we look at what we're considering waste and what's not is a little arbitrary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of stuff, like the stuff don't, depending on how you look at it, it's not going to waste in nature.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, you mm-hmm. know, other bears eat the stuff, or, you know, something consumes it.
Yeah. The nitrogen goes to the spruce trees. I mean, you know, down to the atomic level, it's all going to go somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, someone, you know, everybody's got to make up their own mind. If they don't feel right doing something, they shouldn't do it. But I know that's kind of more the way I look at it, is it ends up, you know, you if you don't shoot, and I tried two or three different of the grizzlies I've killed, and I couldn't eat any of them. It was bad. Mm. So, you know, not to say there can't be a good one, but I really enjoy black bear meat. But I think those grizzlies are just a lot more volatile in what they eat. They eat a lot more rotten stuff. Mm-hmm. Just every one I've skinned just smelled, the meat just smells awful. It's not like, you know, like a moose or, you know, imagine a deer, you know, you know, you get a nice dough or something, you cook, you know, the meat just smells good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not how that grizzly bear meat works. But they got, you know, they, if we want to have, you know, balanced, you know, and populations and a lot of ungulates, you know, then you kind of got to watch out, manage the bears too, you know. And I think species like that do good when they're hunted, you know, that keeps them scared of people.
Ooh, yeah. That's the problem you have in the lower 48 right now. They don't care, you know?
Yeah. You know, bears like, you know, and a lot of the bears where I hunt them specifically, you know, they know what people are, and there's a lot of grizzlies in there, but, you know, people's cabins don't get broke into. You know, they know how to avoid people, and they don't want nothing to do with you. And that's, you know, from generations of being hunted, you know. And that's kind of maybe cherry picking certain things, but no, they're just I find them to be a really fun and challenging animal to hunt, and you know, it has some side benefits too. So
yeah,
what's the most challenging thing about hunting a grizzly?
I think it's just the timing, and where I hunt them or have been hunting them is on bait in really thickly wooded and brushy areas. You know, I think it's actually from the hunts I've done on the coast for brown bears, and you know, in areas where you can glass and see a lot of country and can get around, I think it's a lot of times time wise it's easier to spot and stalk them.
Sounds safer too.
Yeah, you know where they're at.
Yeah, no, that's not always the case, but where I'm at, it's just impossible. But there's a lot of bears, and there's a lot of big bears, so you know they're. So I hunt them on bait, and the two trickiest things are the timing. You know, they don't a grizzly bear will usually, in my experience, will usually come in, and they'll find a bait, and they may come in another night, and then they're gone. They're leaving. You won't see them again, just because, at least in that area, the nature, they're on the move, hunting moose calves and stuff in the spring. They're pretty nomadic. So you kind of got to get your timing right, and they're extremely spooky. You know, any bear I've ever had catch my wind, they're gone, and you never see them again. So it's one of those things, you know, not ever having done much whitetail hunting at all, I would kind of compare it to that, you know, except they have a much larger home range. You know, if you spook them, you're not going to ever see them again.
Well, so, hold on a second, because we're comparing it to whitetail hunting. I was thinking about this earlier when you're talking about bait. Like, bait's kind of like, it's like, seems like to me, like a very acceptable means of killing bears and up there, you know, whatever. And like, nobody's really dissing on it, but like in the whitetail culture, which is one we live in, there's some people hating on bait right now, and it's mostly from states that don't allow it. And it's just like, it's basically, it's just like a plug of, you know, just self pride, I guess, you know, like we can hunt them without bait. We're better than you kind of thing.
Congratulations.
That's what it feels like, at least. So I was like, I was thinking about that. I was like, man, this is kind of a weird deal, that kind of weird world we live in right now. But
it is. And I think, you know, I've looked at that, and I think what it boils down to is people tend to knock stuff they've never tried, and they don't try understanding the context of what you're doing, you know, like bear baiting. You know, even with black bears are typically, you know, I would say a little easier to hunt with baits than the grizzly bears I'm hunting. But it's not as simple as you go put food out in the woods and then you got bears all over it. It's much more nuanced, I guess, to, you know, if you want to call it that, issue. And same thing with, you know, it's easy to say, you know, oh, well, this guy's, you know, baiting whitetails with corn, but I don't really know the context of the situation, you know, because I've had a guy, you know, guys explain to me some of those spots down there, man, if that's not what you're doing, you're just not going to have much luck.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is up here. You know, it's in not everywhere, but in a lot of areas, you know, if you're not using bait for bears, you're kind of pissing up a rope, you know, you're not, you're just not, if you do get a chance at a bear, you can't be selective, you know, you may get a chance at a bear, and who knows what that chance is going to look like or what that bear is going to be. But, you know, you know, I've got no, as you can tell, I've got no qualms about using bait in,
we don't either.
No, sir.
In certain circumstances.
Yeah.
It works, man. Are you using cameras too? Is that kind of how you're patterning bears and determining, you know, what's a shooter and stuff like that?
Yeah. I'll, you know, for a couple of years, and especially the grizzly, with the grizzlies, timing is everything. So, you know, you kind of, I found to be consistently successful, I've got to, you know, have a camera on there so I can see what's going on and when. They a couple of years ago made the cellular cameras illegal up here. Ooh. Which I used them for a couple of years, and it wasn't a matter, it helped me with the grizzlies. It helped save me gas is what it did, because I don't have to go check my baits as often. Mm-hmm. You know, I could just kind of, because grizzlies especially, it's just a waiting game. You got to wait. And then if you want a chance of killing them, you got to hunt the night after they first find the bait, or usually they're gone. They just don't stick around. So I could, you know, it just saved me gas and time. I'm still killing bears, but now I just use, I buy like whatever cheap trail camera I can get off Amazon, because it's probably most of them get chewed on, it seems like, at one point or another. I've had bears destroy so many trail cameras, it's not even funny.
Yeah.
Well, if you live in Alaska, that kind of stinks because they're not legal. But in states that they are, okay, cell phone cameras, as I like to call them.
Cellular phone cameras.
Cellular telephone cameras have really changed a lot of the way that a lot of hunters hunt. We've used them some. We like them. But I feel like there's a specific niche. And I think that in this situation where Tyler's talking about, if they were legal, man, what a great way to not get eaten by a bear, you know?
Yeah.
But Moultrie is actually coming out with a new cell camera. It'll be out this May, maybe even late April. You can use it for turkey hunting this year, pattern them gobs, you know, mm-hmm, what I'm saying? It's called the Delta. It's going to be pretty awesome. It's going to have a really good resolution. And what's one of the things I really, really like about them, okay, is that they store all of your photos and videos on a cloud. Therefore, you've got an SD card, like most cameras.
I can't even get Apple to do that.
I know. You got to pay for it and do all. And they're like, well, it's actually full. It's like it's a cloud. You can't even fill it up. But you have an SD card. You can delete stuff or whatever off the card from your phone, from your cell phone. Mm-hmm. But they can store your pictures that you've always had, that, like, however many you get.
And we get lots of big bucks. I mean, we're gonna need a lot of storage here in Texas.
Lots of shadows. Depends on who has the camera. If OHDH is in there, a few big bucks, but they're going to be some shadows.
They're going to be some shadows. But anyways, there may even be a full SD card when he hangs it.
Y'all go check out Moultrie Mobile and see all of their lineups for their trail cameras.
Man, speaking of gas, we want to let you have the opportunity to speak to what's going on at the ANWR and what your thoughts are on all that.
Oh yeah. I don't think much at all is going to be going on now with the current administration. They pretty much stymied it, but mm-hmm, I think, you know, we were ranting about it on my podcast too. That whole issue, I think just the sad part of it is it gets so over propaganda. And I'm sure, you know, being from Texas, you know, or anywhere that has oil and gas industry, you know, you understand how a lot of times the facts get manipulated. There's several, you know, like the clothing company Sitka Gear made a big post with all these photos and talked about saving our last wilderness. None of them photos were even from the proposed drilling area.
Dead gummit.
You know, the only one that could have been was a picture of a musk ox, and that was probably taken right off the side of the road on the Dalton Highway. The only road up there, which was put up there and is maintained by through the oil industry, like that, and that road opened up millions of acres of access.
Sure.
You know, that's all public ground, and I think it's the corridor 5 miles on either side of the road is, I think it's the largest bow hunting only area in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, that the ANWR, you know, and you get guys like, you know, Meat Eater wrote something and got their you know, token quote from Ranella about ruining our last, you know, great wilderness. Ooh, in Alaska,
go,
when you know, when it's, and it's just everybody, they treat this like it's a foregone conclusion. When it's just, it's propaganda is what it is. People don't really understand the area, what's going on. And that area wasn't even originally supposed to be part of Anwar. It was just lopped in at the last minute and still was set aside for potential oil development. And they're in the back of my truck, son. Sorry. But they, I was on a pretty good rant there. But they, you know, it was an area still set aside for potential oil development. And it had already been completely seismic surveyed once. But, and these guys are, I'm really getting fired up. I'm trying to find.
Keep it going.
Yeah, keep it going with it, man.
To go with this. Yeah. Well, you know, they don't even, you know, they just say things like, oh, well, they think it's going to interfere with the caribou herd. They're not looking at the fish and game studies of the central Arctic herd, which exploded. It went from like at the beginning of oil development, and it was a big concern then what the caribou would do with that oil development, because they calve right there too. And it's immediately adjacent to this drilling area. I mean, they got drill pads all the way up to the edge of it, basically, that you can see on Google Earth. But that caribou herd went from like 5,000 animals when they first started punching wells up to like over 100,000. And then the recent years, it's declined. I mean, it was beyond carrying capacity, and it's gone down to it's about 30-some thousand now, which is right where they want it.
Oh, I'm sure somebody's misusing that stat, too. Like, oh, the herd's down, you know, 70%.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's why I looked, you know, I wrote an article kind of on the subject from Outdoor Life, and that's why I looked into the actual, like, fish and game surveys, and they, you know, why they think they think the decline was due to a bunch of these, you know, they were overpopulated, and a bunch of these cows got old and died, and a big chunk of them mixed with another herd and left with them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, maybe it was the porcupine, because it's the porcupine herd they're concerned about. And all these caribou, there's not like a big fence.
Yeah.
You know, there's not like one of the big fences. There's not like one of the big Texas fences down there keeps, you know, they intermingle and move back and forth. And they're, you know, they're like, oh, well, this tiny little area is their calving grounds. Well, the data shows that they calve all over the place, all the way from Canada out to the central. It's a lot of misleading information. None of these, you know, these major companies and outfits, you know, they just regurgitate the propaganda.
Oh yeah.
They don't take the time, and, you know, like it, and from, you know, from a, there was a, some ecological society that they're, I'm sure they're on the more quote unquote progressive side of things. You know, they even came, that study basically came to the conclusion that the most impactful part of the whole oil process would be the surveying, and that they still, you know, and that it, the only concerns were really boiled down to is if it wasn't done by, according to the regulations that are already in place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like it was some, it wasn't what most people portray it to be. You know, they think that this, and the issues that are real concerns aren't what is said, because that's not what's popular. People just want to, mm-hmm. you know, they want to hear that the polar bears are going to be in danger.
They're running out of ice, like, man. They're floating around on tiny pieces of ice. If you look at social media.
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry. I got to keep going, keep my momentum going. Sure. Along. The last thing that and a lot of these individuals and companies, they'll be like, you know, they'll reference that a certain native group is against it because they're worried about the caribou.
Okay.
Yeah. But the ones they're referencing do not even live in Anwar. But I can understand them being concerned maybe for the welfare of the caribou that do move through there, and they kind of depend on them. But they don't mention that the one community that's in the middle of Anwar, that is in Anwar, that's basically surrounded by that drilling area, wants the oil development. And they've even applied for, you know, there was some article I seen where they're irritated because all Biden said he was going to consult with the native groups before making decisions and whatnot. They didn't hear nothing from him.
It's because he fell down the stairs and he couldn't make it.
But. Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. But they, you know, they found out that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service basically was doing things to undercut their, because that local village, basically, those folks were trying to apply for exploration permits to do it themselves or go through that, you know, and the Fish and Wildlife Service, which is in control of that land, basically just did stuff to undercut their permitting process so they couldn't get their permits turned in on time or something along those lines. There's a bunch of shady stuff that goes on, and it's not what people hear about down in the States. So,
well, it's the same thing. Like what you hear about on the news about, border and a wall may sound outrageous to actually build a wall at the border. But if you don't live in Texas or Arizona or New Mexico, you know, and deal with it, you may be very, you know, it's the same concept here, right? It's like, if you want to know about ANWR, ask an Alaskan maybe a little bit, you know, like maybe let's not talk or ask somebody from Washington, D.C. Let's ask somebody from Alaska. Same deal. If you want to know about the border and what's actually going on, maybe ask somebody from Texas that lives down here, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, I can empathize, man. It's that's kind of our, you know, the kind of, we get that end of the stick a lot of times being far away. It's just whoever has the loudest voice, you know, that's the information that most people end up hearing.
Mm-hmm. Well, people have forgotten that we are a republic and not a democracy, and that's part of the issue. Yep. We're supposed to solve our own issues in our own states, but that's not what's really allowed too often. So
No, that's the truth.
Yeah, man. So it sounds like you might be a little frustrated with one of the major players in the outdoor industry over some certain articles and whatnot. So to stick with that vein just a touch, you know, you work for Outdoor Life, and Outdoor Life, I can't remember who wrote it, but someone came out with a rebuttal article to another media article that was about, you know, the case to be a anti-new hunter. Did you see that? Did you read it or anything?
Oh yeah, I read those and I thought I had recently talked with my editor, because it was four of the Outdoor Life editors, each, you know, contributed their parts to that, you know, as a rebuttal to that.
Yeah, and it was well done.
I thought so too. You know, it's just this, it's an elitist attitude, and that, I mean, that's the. Regarding who we're talking about, I mean, that's the issue I tend to have. And with statements they made about ANWR, you know, it's just super snobby. You know, I think he said, or the quote he gave for the meat eater, which it was kind of pretending to be a, you know, an objective, oh, just this is what's happening with ANWR. You know, go sign up for BHA type of stuff. you know, his quote from there essentially said, you know, that if you support drilling, or if you don't oppose, you know, any oil development in ANWR, you're just a greedy asshole. You know, basically saying that that's what us Alaskans are. You know, when there's a little bit more than just one thing. You know, we have to consider. And I'm not even wouldn't make the argument to anybody that, you know, we absolutely have to drill it now, or it's just the kind of the principle of the thing, you know, like there's a lot of people up here and regular folks that, you know, in one, even if you're not directly tied into oil and gas, like oil and gas pays for a lot. I mean, basically all the state government stuff, and a lot of industry up here supported by it. And, you know, if regular people want the chance to come up here and experience it, you know, they got to get a job. They got to be able to support themselves and their families. And that's, you know, the only path for most people. You know, I guess it's easy to say, you know, you shouldn't touch my private playground when you're a millionaire sitting in Bozeman and can fly, you know, can and do fly all your buddies up here to exploit our resources for profit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's yep. I hope it makes sense why I, you know, hope it sounds reasonable that. You know, myself and a lot of other people are a little miffed at that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, not quite as much, but still, said individuals were down in Texas shooting Axis and making profit off of it, you know, and it's just like, no, why don't y'all let the Texas people be the Texas people? You know, they feel the same way, you know?
You know, and it's not that I would want to exclude anybody from being able to come, you know, to go do that or do this, but it's when you start, you know, it's just kind of an elitist type, you know, kind of a snobby type thing,
and a Bozeman type thing, right?
that seems to perforate, that's not I just need to stop trying to be fancy with words, but it's something that kind of permeates, that's what I was looking for. A lot of that, not all, but a lot of that type of stuff, I mean, it just, yeah, it's not something that I'm much of a fan of.
I know, and I can tell that by we get a real big kick every year because you kill a doll sheep, I think, every year. And you are the only member that I know of the Less Than 15 Club or something like that. You know, like, I really like that joke, man.
Oh, yeah, that was – sometimes I'll go to great lengths just to be a smart ass.
like yeah, the top one of a mountain. Year,
it was like – I think it was a couple of years after they did – which, the like, that Less Than One Club thing was a genius move for Sheep Foundation to, like, you know, boost their membership. And, I mean, that's a whole, you know, Sheep Foundation's a whole other issue for me. But, everyone's doing the T-shirt thing, and that's fine. I could care less, but I just thought it would be funny that year. So I made a Less Than 11 Club shirt and took it. I didn't tell my hunt partner I took it, or he would like make me burn it because I was jinxing the hunt or something. I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious, and I'm not superstitious enough to not do it. But I was quiet about it.
You didn't wear it before you shot the animal. Yeah,
yeah. I didn't tell him nothing till afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. So you don't like, you know, when I think of a sheep hunter. What a lot of people don't realize, especially if they haven't been to a show of some sort, is these sheep hunters look giant, and like they're like monarchs of men, you know, on social media. And then you see them, and they're like 127 pounds. You don't look like a guy that weighs 127 pounds.
No, I've add 100 pounds to that.
Yeah, you're solid, you know. Like, you don't look like a guy that would be getting up and down, you know, above timberline and so, like, what's the secret, man? Obviously, I guess there's a toughness factor, right? But, like, you know, do you do any working out or anything like that?
You believe it or not, I used to be in really good shape back in the college days, and, you know, then I, you know, had kids and got busy, and, you know, I haven't really done a heck of a lot of working out. I actually this winter have been dieting, doing a little not eating. Just because I was going, especially with the whole COVID thing going into winter, I was like, man, I got to turn this thing around. And so I'm feeling better. It's good to be healthy. But you don't have to be crazy. You know, so much of that stuff's just mental and perseverance. Yeah, it's physical discomfort too. But, you know, you just go at the pace you can. And, you know, you realize you're not having to like run a marathon against Cameron Haynes or you don't get your sheep type of deal. You know, so it's just, you know, you want to be in good enough condition and know how to not get yourself hurt. I think if you're a little less experienced, being in better shape will help because it helps you deal with the hardship a little better. And especially you don't know how hard it's going to be or, you know, just how miserable it's going to be, then it can be kind of demoralizing. I mean, it's still demoralizing sometimes. You just know that it's going to suck, and you're just going to keep throwing your feet in front of each other until you get there.
Yeah. How many days a year do you average before you shoot a legal ram?
Not too many, really. I would say most of the time. And it's hard because it includes, you know, usually a solid day or 2 days of like walking and, you know, whether it's you ride your four-wheeler ways and then pack in, you know, all that's usually, you know, a day or 2 days. And then of actual hunting over the years, probably, you know, maybe 3 days of hunting, of hard hunting, sometimes more, you know, a couple of them I've killed, you know, right at the 10-day or 14-day mark. But overall, you know, it's been pretty good to me.
Yeah, that's
great. I don't know. It'd be tough to keep up with it if everyone took 10 days.
Yeah, I would imagine, man. Do you usually
but
try
you
to?
You never know. You got to plan for weather, and sometimes you get stuck in the tent for a couple days, mm-hmm. you know.
Do you try to locate like a band of rams before season opens and be ready to go as soon as that happens?
If I'm hunting the opener, that's generally what I do. And yeah, I think last year killed one on the opener. The year before I spent about 12 days chasing one around with my recurve before I finally did it, before we rifle banged him. a lot of them, yeah, it's if I'm hunting opener, usually, you know, it's not, a lot of mine have been killed on opening day. And I used to have that because my second one was, I think my third, no, maybe my third one wasn't, but it was like a barrier. I'm like, oh man, I don't know what I'm going to, once you get past opening day, how am I going to get it done?
What does that look like?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Is that the thing that you know, I don't know, as far as the hunts go and stuff, is that the thing that you really, really enjoy is the sheep stuff?
Yeah, I do. And that's definitely what I've kind of prioritized. My entire adult life was always sheep hunting. But I mean, everything is kind of has its own special attraction to me. You know, I love bear baiting and just sitting in the woods at night and hunting bears that way. I love, you know, sheep
when you
hunting,
say at night,
moose hunting.
What do you mean? Because it's Alaska, it's like, you know, evening hours, or do you mean like it's dark nighttime and you're hunting bears?
No, it's just Alaska. Cause once we get into late May, early June, it doesn't get dark anymore.
Yeah.
And so, you know, black bears usually like the prime times between, you know, 10:30 and midnight is kind of their witching hour where we end up killing most of them. Grizzly bears can really be at any time. Like they're so much more random. They just don't pattern, you know, they may come in once a night for two nights, then leave, or they may come, you know, they may spend hours going in and out of there in the same 2-day period and leave, you know. So what if you get on there and there's been a grizzly bear on it, you know, you just got to be prepared to sit all night. And I've done that a few times. And one time, you know, last year I sat all night, finally gave up, went in, rebaited, and was standing in my boat, putting my rain gear on because it was pretty cold for the ride back. You know, I had like a 3-hour ride back, and hear a bear run off through the woods. Had been walking down the river, going to go into the bait, you know, after I had already pulled the plug, and
golly.
So he was gone.
Yeah,
but it's sitting all night, and it does get pretty dark, kind of dims down to a twilight, you know, 2-3 o'clock in the morning for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a long-winded answer to that question.
That's cool. I mean, of course, being from, you know, Texas, I'm a little grizzly scared. And it's kind of a joke and kind of a fun thing, you know. But for real, you know, like, I'm sure it's a different feeling being somewhere where something can definitely just, you know, kill you anytime it wants to, you know, and being in the tree trying to hunt that thing. So that's always curious to me. I don't know. One of these days, I kind of want to go hunt grizzly country and do that thing just to, you know, to see what it's all about, but I kind of have to psych myself up for it a little bit.
Yeah, it can be a little unnerving. Some of them things, like going into, especially this, one particular bait I have that I have killed some grizzlies off of. I always get a little nervous going in there because you can't see very well. It's all real thick timber and brush, and you just never know where one's going to be laying down or on the bait when you get there sometimes. Mm-mm. You know, it's a little nerve-wracking. You know, you always, even if I'm hunting with my bow, I mean, it's stupid to go in there without a big rifle. So,
yeah,
I always go kind of prepared to deal with those situations. I used to actually sit on the ground in a ground blind, and I just quit trying to hunt grizzlies like that because every time I could never get a shot off, they would always see, you know, they'd always see me and charge, or usually they charge and then run off.
No.
Yeah. So they can climb trees, but I, you know, it's just, you can see a bit better. It's easier to stay undetected for longer in a tree stand.
Yeah.
Because they won't, once they figure out you're there, they're gone. And then track, you know, tracking them. I end up hunting by myself a lot of times. So track blood trailing.
It's because no one else wants to go with you.
Yeah. Well, sometimes my schedule is I just got to go when I can go. And it's, if I, not that I don't like taking people with me, but, or, you know, buddies coming along. But,
yeah.
I just go do it. And yeah, like I had one blood trail one last year. I shot with my COVID project was one of them Kentucky rifle kits.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And so I shot a couple black bears with it, kind of take it for a test run. And then I ended up shooting a big grizzly bear with it and, shot him right. And then, you know, I gave him, I was sure I hit him good, but I'm the type of guy, I'll start second guessing stuff.
Me too.
It's easier. And I try to film all these, you know, shots, and with a bow, you know, I can go back and really, really pick through what happened and figure out what kind of shape I'm in, you know, as far as shot placement. But not quite the same with that old smoke wagon. And I was sure, you know, everything felt good, no hang fire, just, you know, my sight picture was good. I heard him run off a ways and then stop, and usually they're dead right where the last place you heard them. So, but I gave it an hour and go in. I find myself blood trailing him at like the darkest part of the night. So I'm kind of straining, and I finally found where, and I didn't expect that, as I shot him with a round ball. I didn't expect it to exit, but he was spraying blood or rubbing blood off his side where the wound was. And so once I got dialed into what level to look for blood, you know, and I, you know, took it slow, and then you start worrying if, I don't know if you've ever done a blood trail where you're going real slow and you're like, I should have found it by now. You feel like you're going forever. And then,
yeah, especially in the dark,
you know, yeah. And then you look up and there he's laying there, but then, you know, turn around and walk back to the boat, and he didn't go very far at all. It just felt like it.
Yeah.
But, that's you know, I can't hardly, like, when I actually find the deer, like the moment my eyes see the deer in the dark, I kind of like almost jump out of my skin. I couldn't imagine if it was a grizzly.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's like, they're just like, when you see, all of a sudden you see that patch of fur, you're like, whoa. Oh
yeah, there it is.
Like something big is right there.
Yeah. No, on this one, it was, you know, I was looking at that, and then all of a sudden, you know, there was an alder that was busted over, like he'd just run right through it or something, and then kind of looked up and just seen the hair and watched him for a minute before I made my approach.
Yeah.
That rapidly turns into, what the hell am I going to do with this thing?
Yeah, I guess what do you do? You skin it whole, and then you take the skull with you, and that's kind of what you do in a grizz?
Yeah, take the, you know, skin it on the spot if I can't drag him, and he was too big to drag. So skin him and take the skull off and get back to the boat. Black bears most of the time I take one of the little kids, like, snow sled, and I tied some rope on there, and I can just drag most of those bears out of the woods on a sled. I'd rather deal with them and butcher them at home, you know, for black bears. But sometimes you don't have a choice.
yeah, that makes sense. What's the tastiest thing that you partake in up there in Alaska?
I'd say definitely sheep.
Yeah,
really?
Sheep's delicious, man.
Over, I mean, even fish or anything, right? Just sheep is the thing.
Yeah, no, and I like fish too, you know, but we're kind of, in Fairbanks, we're kind of right in the middle of the state, and we get some fishing opportunities, but, you know, not a lot of good, like, fresh ocean salmon unless you travel. But definitely sheep. I mean, I love moose meat, man. That's a staple for me. And I like the black bears too. I make a lot of smoked sausages out of them and stuff like that. They're great for that. But yeah, plenty of good stuff. Caribou, you know, most of the time caribou's pretty good. I've had a couple stanky ones there, but yeah. No, we sheep. Got plenty to choose from. Yeah.
So what do you do with sheep? Is it, do you treat it a lot like you would, you know, one of the deer species or something like that?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'll grind all my scrap, but mostly it's steaks, you know, I make as many steaks as I can out of it, because it's a real, you wouldn't think, you know, you wouldn't think that it would be, but it's a real a tender, like super fine grained meat. And it's a little greasy. It's not like marbled, but it's a little greasier than a lot of other meats.
Mm-hmm.
It's phenomenal steak. Like, you know, especially backstraps. You do backstrap steaks, you can cut them with a fork.
Ooh.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And there's just not a lot of bad cuts on a sheep. It's all really good meat.
Huh. That sounds cool, man.
Might have to do that someday.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's like, and that's a big old, you know, what, 9-year-old Billy, right, that you're always eating. So it's kind of crazy. Yeah.
No, oh. For such an old, you know, you're a lot of time, yeah, you're shooting, you know, 8, 9, 10-year-old animals, and they're surprisingly tender for how old of a how many years they've been running around the mountains.
And they just eat lichens and rocks, pretty much. So, I mean, yeah. It makes it delicious food.
Hey, we talked earlier in the intro about the video we did that was a comparison video with the saddles. We are excited to actually announce that we are working formally with Cruiser Saddles. And I'm also excited to announce that if you couldn't tell and you watched that video, there's a moment where I put the saddle on, the Cruiser saddle, and like there's a, you can tell like it's a genuine like, ooh, this is this is different.
<It's> nice.
Kind of pull your shoulders back and you're like, this is comfortable. And that's what we'd heard from when we did the saddle videos going into the postseason this year. We heard from several different people in the comment section about how Cruiser was the way to go. Apparently it is. Chad, the owner, we really like. He lines up really well with our values, and it's just a good dude. They're trying hard to put out a great product, and I think they're succeeding at it right now. So we're excited to be using Cruiser saddles. We're going to be pig hunting out of them this year or this spring, and then we're going to go right into the season using them.
Yeah, I would imagine if all things go well that Chad's going to be in a state with us in the fall doing hunting. We're going to be doing a little saddling and out-of-state hunts.
Chadwick.
Yep. So, yeah, man, I'm super stoked to hunt out of a Cruiser this year. And hopefully it won't be too comfortable and I fall asleep, but it'll be just right.
Are you going to hunt a grizzly out of a saddle?
I'm going to hunt. I'm going to need a diaper, that's for sure. If I hunt grizzlies. Yeah. Well, so for people that like are aspiring, you know, thinking about Alaska, and I know that since you're a native there, that it might maybe is a different approach for you, but like you also probably can give some really good advice about like how to go about that. You know, I guess first of all, if I want to go hunt in Alaska, how far out do I need to be planning to try to head up there?
Yeah, I depending on what you're wanting to do, and especially if it's the first hunt you're doing, you know, it wouldn't be crazy to start planning out a couple years ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, if you're going to go on like, you know, have an air charter, you know, drop you off somewhere on a flyout hunt, you usually want to have that stuff lined up and booked. It kind of depends on the air service. Most of them, you know, a little less than a year. I don't know of anybody that's booking out more than a year in advance, but you know, if it's like, you know, September, October, November, you ought to be thinking about the following fall, because a lot of those, some of those air services will open up their bookings in like October or so for the following fall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can pretty, if you wait till springtime, you're probably going to have a hard time finding a spot. But there's a couple air services that just get so booked up that they have a waiting list that you just get on, and they've got, you know, they give first dibs to their return clients, and if they don't book, then the first person in line gets dibs, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
those are the guys you want to go with because they're still alive.
Yeah.
The other guys hadn't been flying long enough to get into a wreck.
Yeah, no, and that's it can be an issue, but there's a lot of good air charters out there. It's expensive, getting more expensive by the year. You know, it's a you know, business that just gets through insurance and regulations, you know, has just gotten exponentially expensive. I mean, we used to fly up to the Brooks Range to hunt sheep. And it would cost us, I think the last time I did it in 2014, it cost us about $2,200 a person, you know, and that's two guys to a plane. So basically $4,400 or whatever it was a plane.
Mm.
And, you know, I thought, yeah, it was expensive, but it was still reasonable. you know, if you kind of budget for it throughout the year. But now it's like, I think it want to say it's like $4,000 a person.
Golly, man.
You know, which, you know, back to the, yeah, back to the whole low hashtag public land stuff, you know, it's just, there's a lot of factors that end up regulating people out of being able to access the country. So it's kind of sad, mm-hmm. but, no, I would, but air services, there are some good ones out there, and there's, and there definitely can be a really good way to go and for a real fun experience to kind of get the whole pie. But I would start talking to those guys well in advance. You know, a couple of years out from when you want to do a hunt, you know, is a good time to start scheming and saving and asking questions and stuff like that.
Do you think that, you know, doing the whole fly-in trip and, you know, trying to kill a moose or, you know, do something real cool like that is the way to go? Or can Alaska be experienced, you know, flying into Anchorage, sort of DIY, shooting, you know, Sitka blacktails, bears, and caribou or something like that? Is that kind of more attainable for somebody?
I think it's attainable, but it's more difficult for sure, on average. You know, the biggest thing up here is typically logistics and getting to good hunting and finding good hunting.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so big and everything's so remote and inaccessible that, and we don't have the game density that a lot of places have. You know, when I first moved up here, like a lot of people have the idea that there's just critters behind every tree and rock and bush up here. And it's just not the case.
There's just a lot of trees and rocks and bushes, right?
So. There's a lot of trees and rocks and bushes, for sure. So, you know, you can do research and find opportunities that are, you know, road accessible, and you can still have a great time. It's just going to be more difficult for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So do you feel like if you're going to tell somebody, you know, like, hey, this is what you should go do in Alaska when you come on a hunt, like what's that look like?
Man, I think for a lot of people, something like a fly out caribou hunt would be a good one, you know, because you can get some kind of remote wilderness, you know, self-sustainability type of camping type of hunt. And you can, you know, a lot of time, I mean, there's a lot of caribou herds that are doing pretty well up here right now. And, you know, numbers wise, you know, that's going to be the resource that's most easily accessible. And I mean, they're a super cool animal and not terribly difficult to hunt, you know, if you get into them. But you know, the combination of the volume of opportunity and variety of places you could choose to go, you know, something like that would probably be a really good first trip. Aside from that, you know, something like Sitka blacktails on Kodiak, or there, you know, there's places in Southeast and stuff like that have them. But Kodiak has some pretty good charter services. You know, they can drop you off in tent camp, or there's some boat camping outfits where you camp on, you know, a big yacht almost, and then you can move around and they'll drop you off for the day to hunt and come back and can help you deal with your stuff. And there's some lodges around, you know, there's lodge on a Fognak Island that I went to a bunch and worked at, guided for a little bit. So stuff like that, there's really a wide gamut based on your, you know, for a wide variety of budgets and what you really want to get out of it. There's some options, is a long-winded way to say, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the, you know, like, what do you got to have when you come up there? Like, I feel like there's kind of an entry level amount of money to get you up there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, most of your, I can't remember what a hunting license is, but depending on what you're hunting, you know, it may cost you $800 or $1,000, you know, for your licenses and stuff. And man, it just depends, you know, your transportation, it's going to depend on, you know, whether you're chartering and where you're going. If you're going to have I don't know if I can really give a great ballpark for that, but you know, you could probably come do a pretty good hunt for, you know, $2,000 to $3,000, maybe some of them.
So,
you know, as far as stuff, but then the only thing I would for sure mention is that there sometimes are some unforeseen expenses you got to account for, you know, you want to plan for maybe depending on where you're going and on extra day or two on one end or the other in case you get, you know, weather delayed somewhere, or, you know, you have to stay in a hotel an extra night, and, you know, or if you have to buy something to package your meat, or, you know, buy coolers to bring your meat back home or whatever. Mm. Some of that nickel and dime stuff can kind of add up, and it's just stuff you want to be aware of ahead of time, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So is that like, in that case, would you suggest, like, especially if you're a first timer, like trying to get the help of an outfitter to help you kind of line up, you know, the best means of travel and all the other little details that may not be familiar to lower 48 guys?
Yeah, it's certainly not a bad way to go, you know, and you don't have to go on a full guided hunt. You know, I think there's still some, you know, you can look at forums and find, you know, some, like, I think there's some, they call them hunt planning services. They're a little, you know, it's a little interesting walking the line between guiding and not guiding, but there's you know, a lot of the air charter, air taxis and stuff like that, like they've been doing it a long time, and they kind of know a lot of that common stuff, and, you know, the frequently asked questions type of stuff that as far as the context that they're working in, you're usually pretty good at answering stuff like that.
Yeah. It just seems like to me, like, what if I, like, when I think about some of the overwhelming parts of, like, the DIY deal is, like, you know, there's a lot of, like, content out there to teach you how to elk hunt, and there's a lot of content out there to teach you how to deer hunt. And, you know, if I'm hunting deer in, you know, Texas, I can take some things that I've learned about deer and deer behavior and go hunt in Illinois and still do pretty decent, probably, you know, and just adapt to more agriculture or whatever it is. But, like, you know, most guys in the lower 48 haven't ever hunted moose, and they haven't ever hunted bear, or, you know, they might have hunted some black bears, you know, and they haven't hunted caribou, and they haven't hunted sheep. And so it's like, like all the species up there, it's like a foreign continent almost, you know? And it's like, how do you, as a DIY guy, like, I mean, you can learn some stuff, but how do you know that that place is so big, right? We talked about it before we got on the podcast. It's like, how do you know that you're going into the right valley where, you know, moose even exist, you know, and how do you know that, like, what they're eating and stuff? You know, for me, like I said, I can know that a deer is going to go in and out of a cornfield every night and come out of, you know, a creek bottom or whatever. So I can kind of put myself in between that situation, but it's a way different deal up there. You know, do you have any tips or thoughts about how to, like, if you really want that DIY experience, you know, like, how do you find out good information about how to get on those species, different species?
Yeah, and that makes total sense, because a lot of it is different, you know, like moose, during most of moose season, you're not really targeting feed, you know, you're calling them or just glassing them. And sometimes we sometimes don't know, you know, which valley to pick. That type of stuff. Alaska Fishing Game has got some pretty good, like, basic info on their website, and, you know, you can call up the fishing game offices, and usually they're pretty helpful with, you know, generic type of information. And I guess I don't really have a good individual source for, like, each specific thing in mind, but, you know, you just kind of got to try it. Well, part of it, you kind of got to just glean what information you can through several different sources and talking to your charters. And, you know, if you got to reach out to guys that have done it on specific questions to get, you know, kind of a basic game plan. I guess that's a roundabout way of not answering your question at all.
No, that's it. Not every question has an answer.
No, there's not a real clear cut answer, but you can get some, you know, you can look around, and there's a lot of good, you know, Alaska, Northern type content on YouTube, stuff like that, that, you know, and it, that you can glean little bits of information from. What, you know, eventually you're just going to have to do it and get that learning. You know, it's going to be a learning curve at some level, when it boils down to it. But, you know, yeah, charter services, you know, like they're generally good. You know, if you're going to go with a charter service, they kind of know the areas and they can get you pointed in the right direction, usually, as far as how to go about it. You know, they are, at the, when it boils down to it, they are a taxi, and that's their job. But most of those guys are pretty helpful too, as far as tips like that. But yeah, it can take some legwork and hitting a bunch of different sources to try and get an idea of what's going on and how to go about it, because it is definitely different.
Yeah, gotcha.
Do y'all talk about stuff like that on Tundra Talk?
Yeah, quite a bit. Between talking crap and politics. And just, you know, random, we try not to do too much politics, but just random stuff. You know, we end up telling stories. We end up going over a lot of, presenting quite a bit of useful information. Mm-hmm. You know, you may have to actually listen to a bunch of it to find specifically what you're looking for. But
That is a good podcast plug. You're gonna have to listen to a lot of it.
We like to tell the truth.
That's right, man.
That's the way it is.
Yeah.
We talk about every, you know, basically, and that's kind of, you know, why I started that podcast. Was there just, I couldn't find anything that I felt really accurately represented, you know, our perspective as just regular guys who live up here and like to hunt and fish and do the kind of stuff we do. And there's a lot of people up here that no one would ever hear of otherwise that have a lot of cool stories and mm-hmm. savvy and experience. And, we like to get together and talk about the stuff, regardless whether we're recording or not. So we might as well be recording it. And there's a lot of experience and stuff that gets talked about on there, you know, whether it's, you know, ice fishing for pike or bear, you know, bear baiting or sheep hunting or moose hunting or anything like that. You know, there's enough useful information there to justify listening to it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I've dabbled just a little bit, but Alaska's still a little ways off, so I haven't, you know. Forgive me for not doing a deep dive into Tundra Talk yet, but one of these days, man, it's on the radar. I got a uncle in Anchorage that's got a boat, and he's like, man, anytime you make it up, it's like, well, the making it up part's the hard part, you know, like,
yeah,
is committing to do it, you know. And like Tyler was saying, it's a good chunk of change, because quite frankly, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to go to Alaska without my wife, you know, because she's gonna be like, well, I want to see that, you know, or whatever. So I think you kind of have to work all that out. But it sounds like a pretty cool deal, man, and you're blessed to get to live there for sure. I know that, like I said, in January, it's probably hard to see. Kind of like for us, it's hard to see in July while we live in Texas. But, it's a cool thing about our outdoorsmen that I've found that's kind of, widespread. Outdoorsmen are the type of people who do the best with what they got and are pretty happy with it, you know. And,
yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, it's... Yeah, definitely blessed to live up here and try to remain thankful for it all the time. You know, I mean, there's just so much. If a guy wants it, there's so much opportunity, you know, for all kinds of fun trouble to get into up here. So, it's awesome.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Well, Tyler, we'll link to the podcast down in the show notes below, and also I'll link to an article or two of yours that because you're a pretty good writer and I appreciate some of the stuff you have to say. So
thanks, man.
Appreciate what you've had to say today on the show as well. Mm-hmm. And thanks for chit-chatting with us and filling us in on everything Alaska, dude.
Yeah, anytime, man. Thanks for asking me. It was a good time, and hopefully I don't get you in too much trouble.
So we want to eat sheep. That's the drive behind sheep hunting, right? Is how tasty they are. Eat them. I've heard people say that before, that sheep are good eating. I mean, of course, I've had zero experience with that.
That's a pretty interesting microphone you got there.
My wires up around my mic. So,
yeah. I've my dad always made fun of the sheep that we used to shoot in Texas. And
those probably aren't tasty.
I don't know. Like, I wasn't old enough, you know, but I do know that we always made sheep or ram chili is what we called it. Because that was the way to, I guess, mask the flavor. Oh,
yeah. People, let me let you know something. When people love deer meat, they love venison, they're like, oh, I can't wait to have deer chili. That means that you don't actually like it. Yeah. That's what that means. It means you're masking something or what, you know.
When you're trying to cut it all into steaks, that's when you know you like it.
Not to be elitist, okay, because we learned from Tyler that that's bad, and I'd agree, right? Yeah. But whenever you do break out of that mold of chicken fried, jerky, and chili, and you go to the next thing, that's when you know that, like, hey, I'm kind of getting into this a little bit. I'll eat this.
It's fun. I enjoy cooking. That's one thing I've missed over the last couple of years is I haven't had a house in 3 years. We did a little bit. I did a little bit of cooking there at the shop that I had for a couple of years. But it's still like our kitchen was literally a makeshift deal on like a wooden bench. We didn't have everything we had was either crock pot or on a single burner that plugged into the wall. Or I had this like big like, it's like a electric skillet is what it was. It's almost like a griddle, but it's got walls on it, you know?
That sounds cool.
Yeah, and so, like, I cooked a gumbo in that.
Is that the one that we took to Iowa and burned the fuse out with?
That was an electric griddle and, destroyed our
inverter.
It was 14
degrees that morning, and we were trying to cook pancakes on the tailgate or something.
Yeah, that was a good idea.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was.
But anyway, that's something I really enjoy, and I'm going to hopefully enjoy again soon when we get this house built.
Man, I've been cooking some, but just since we have the kiddo and stuff, it's just all my meals are just utilitarian or whatever you want to call it, where it's just like I haven't got to experiment or do anything. It's just been like spaghetti and tacos, which I love tacos, don't get me wrong, you know, but I am ready to get back into doing a little bit more of the let's see about this thing I can't pronounce and see what it tastes like. You know?
It's fun, man. I like it.
And hopefully we get to kill some turkeys this year and
hope
that you can do some more of that kind of stuff with that as well.
Yeah.
I'm ready to get back. And I know I talk about it a lot, but that pozole that you make out of thighs and legs, boy, howdy.
Eyes?
Huh?
Eyes and legs?
Eyes and legs, yeah. Yep.
I love turkey eyes.
You need to eat a turkey eye this year, for sure.
I think Hunter should. Hunter the Hunter.
Hunter the Hunter.
You know what? You had this saying the last couple of years that I really like.
Okay.
It's you say, when we're talking about, we're usually like scheming, and we're about to go into an afternoon, we're trying to figure out where to go, if we should go look and drive instead, and you always go, Hunter's Hunt.
That's right, dude. Hunter's Hunt.
And so, I mean, we should use that this year, especially with our hunter.
We need to tell him to hunt in the mornings.
Hunters get up.
Yeah, hunters get up early and hunt.
Hunters know how to set their alarm and get up and hunt.
Yeah. Anyways, big thanks to Tyler for coming on. Tyler Friel.
You're welcome.
And Tyler Jones for coming on the podcast today. We had the two T's today. TT, if you will.
Tooties.
Tooties. Oh, it's all good. But, you know, the Alaska thing, something a little bit different, but it's real cool, you know, and it's something we all like to dream about, you know what I mean? What are you laughing at? It ain't Alaska, what is it?
I can't stop. Sorry. TTs.
Yeah, it's him.
The TTs.
Yeah. Yeah, y'all can just start your own podcast.
Don't say that too fast.
Start your own podcast called the TT Podcast. But
don't say it too fast, though.
Okay, I won't. I won't. I don't ever say things fast, so it shouldn't be a problem for me. Oh, guys, if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, we really, really appreciate that. Really would appreciate that. Like I said, I never say things fast. And go check out what we got going on YouTube. It helps out a lot if you hit the subscribe over there. And
the bell for notifications. We never talk about that.
Yeah, because it's lame.
It is lame that you have to do that. But, man, like, if you don't, you're just not going to see our stuff
very often.
I get
notified by a couple of YouTube channels, and I do appreciate it. But I keep it to the ones that I do care about. So please care about us and hit the bell for notifications. You know,
I mean, if you care to kill deer next year, then you should definitely hit the bell.
In fact, if you want to kill deer next year,
like
we are the
YouTube
channel.
You won't kill a deer
if
you don't watch our YouTube channel.
Oh, man. Anyways, guys, I hope y'all are looking forward to something right now. I kind of have cabin fever a little bit. I've got to fish a day and a half, and I didn't even get my thumbs rough, really, to tell you the truth. My dad and granddad are out ripping slabs right now, I know.
This weekend.
And, man, I probably, I might have to build a chicken coop for your wife. So
I think what we have to do is a spawn video with old Dylan again.
Isn't that on the 3rd? Is that this weekend?
It's on Saturday. Yep.
Sounds good.
Sounds like a good time to get eat some fish.
Yeah, so if you haven't watched that video, go check out the video we did on pre-spawn crappie. We used a little bit of live scope action on that. Mm-hmm. It was pretty cool with Dylan Gossett of Red Line Guide Service. We're going to go do a little bit of that this weekend as well. Maybe bring in some slabs of our own. Who knows? Mm. But I do know that some fish are in my future, whether it is now or this summer. Tyler's already talking about summer fishing trips in the mountains. So I'm not mad about that one bit.
We are about 2 months from going.
Man alive.
I can't do the... we never, because of volleyball, we never are able to do like the best time of the year. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's what we're gonna do. I'm gonna try to do August 1st-ish type.
We did that trip. 1 year, and yeah. I didn't really know that much about fly fishing, but I caught one of the coolest rainbows I've ever caught. It was about 9 inches.
Last year we went like right after 4th of July, and it was still like a lot of snow. But if you go up there knowing like early June that that's gonna be a thing, you can just fish all the lower stuff and mm-hmm. probably be in good shape. But anyways, I hope y'all are looking forward to something. I hope if you have an open turkey season that you've got to go out after gobblers. We will be doing that in a few weeks shortly. Really stoked about it and can't wait to eat a bunch of birds this spring and summer. So with that, we will leave it with you. Remember, guys, this is your element.
Live in it.
Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate Batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate Batteries. I use Interstate Batteries in my boats. I use Interstate Batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.